You're listening to the True Faith Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Widdring. I'm joined, delighted to be joined by Mr. Michael Carling. How are you doing, Michael?
Rough, but full of beans because of that magnificent performance yesterday.
It's been some weekend and me and Mickey, we've lived it up and we've had a wonderful time. But just before we get into things, this episode is sponsored by FansBet, a unique betting company who gives 50% of all your losses to your designated fan cause. And also, of course, by most importantly, by our very own patrons who pay somewhere between £6 or £7 a month for lots and lots of juicy NUFC content, lots of exclusive shows for them, including the match day, which is absolutely not to be missed this this week with Norman catching all the goals. It's definitely one to listen to. So if you like what we do, if you like what we hear, please get in, sign up to our Patreon and give it a try. We've got loads of class content coming over the summer as well, so you will not be without your True Faith fix. So please do stay with us. So let's crack on. Craven Cottage, a sunny day on the 12th of May, the banks of the Thames, 4-0. Mickey, it was an amazing performance, an atmosphere. Just for me, it was just the perfect away trip, absolute perfect away trip. Why is it that Newcastle love the final day of the season so much?
Who knows, mate? Like, there's just something in the fucking blood of us, isn't there? The last day of the season, we seem to just go off like a rocket. So this is like the fourth year in a row.
I think so, yeah. And it's quite remarkable that, like, we almost had. In footballing terms, we almost had like nothing to play for, a bit of a dead rubber. Fulham already down. We were, playing for 13th place? I mean, but, you know, with the stakes relatively so low, that was possibly one of our most comprehensive performances of the entire campaign. Was it simply because, the pressure was off? Or was it a case of, with the Rafa contract situation, is this just a case of Rafa's players believing in him and playing the hearts out for him?
Yeah, I definitely think there's something in that. So, the stars all aligned for yesterday. The individual performances across the whole team were outstanding, which obviously we'll come to later. But I think you're right there. I think a lot of those lads and the manager will have thought, I want to go out with a fucking bang today. If it does happen to be Rafa's last game, if it's not Rondon's last game, if it's Perez's last game, if it's Shelby's last game, you could see all of them really wanted to put in a performance, and they all fucking did. Now we all fucking pray that it's not Rafa's last game, but it felt like that for me yesterday. Not to be too negative about it, it felt like everyone wanted to send him off properly. I don't know if you thought that.
No, I sort of didn't get that impression. I mean, I think we're going to be reading and it's talking a lot about this surely over the next sort of week and a half. I believe that when Rafa was asked, he'd sort of known from this weekend, he'd know in 10 days time. So Mike Ashley reportedly went into the dressing room as well and spoke to the players. Not sure what's happening with that cancelled Las Vegas trip, Mike. Yeah. That's probably not going to go down too well. Is Jamal Lascelles going to organise another another mutiny? There's just a huge question mark hanging over, but I mean, In terms of that game, I couldn't have asked for much more. The atmosphere again, like the travelling Geordie fans, like, I mean, we've seen it written a few times, but it's like, what if we actually won something? We're celebrating 13th position against an already relegated side, knowing that our world class manager that pulls everything together might be 1 foot out the door. Like, how does a Geordie fan base retain that faith and passion?
Well, it's fucking magnificent, isn't it? The away support yesterday, and we were a little bit nervous about what the away end was going to be like on the way down, but that fear was misplaced. The away end was fucking brilliant. The whole game, it was non-stop singing. Second half, got loads of the older songs back out, which
proper,
I really like.
Proper greatest hits, doesn't it? It's fantastic.
People sing about Andy Cole, and often gets forgotten about Andy Cole by Newcastle fans, so you never really get sung about. So when I heard that, I was just like, get in, lads. And it was 90 minutes non-stop singing, plus half time, outside on the way back, on the way into the grounds. It was like, it was just fucking brilliant. And you're right, Adam, like, imagine what it would be like if we were just good. Like, this is us when we're terrible and we still took the whole allocation, all the whole of the neutral bit. I bet there was other Toon fans dotted around. 1,500 of them got on a boat to get to the match.
Fair play. Like, I mean, we saw some of the footage and there's smoke flares going off. Like, those boats were definitely oversubscribed. Oh, like, they were packed in like sardines, but very drunken sardines.
Yeah.
Everyone looked like they were having an absolutely class time. So fair play for, for the lads who sorted that out and, got national coverage. So yeah.
They've done a really good job of it, to be fair to them. But I just to like really drive home the point that away end was the best it could possibly be. And that's what this club is and that's what we're about. And we're one step away from it going either really fucking well or really fucking badly, and you just hope that the right decision's made this week.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you. And you kind of look at the fan base, and you look at the last two games of the season. You know, that very unfortunate defeat against Liverpool, when I believe a 2-2 was probably the fairer result, and absolutely smashing Fulham in an away performance on the last game of the season in a dead rubber. You know, you saw the big flag display. What the war flags did with the huge Gallagher surfer, and you saw the strength of the support yesterday. I think as fans we're given the best account that we can of ourselves. We're being just the very best that we can be. That's going to appeal to anyone who might even have a half inkling of possibly putting a bid in to buying the club away from Mike Ashley. But you know what, like that performance was just like near complete. I mean,
yesterday was one of the days where you feel really proud to be from Newcastle and to be part of that group.
Yeah. It's funny, Mickey, as well, you were mentioning like, you know, singing on the way to the ground and the way out of the ground and all the way through the match and stuff like that. There was some singing on the tube as well, wasn't there?
it's a London tradition.
Mickey, tell them what you were doing on the tube, and this is the night before as well, at approximately 2 a.m.
I did the full Amiobi on the tube. You have to do the Amiobi on the tube when you go to London. It's the rules.
I did get some video evidence of this. I can't promise it'll ever be shared publicly, but it does exist.
I need to make sure my lass doesn't see that video, because it shows how fucking mortal I was.
I'm probably going to hold this above your head for a while, just get some favours out of you like first. But in terms of like the team sheet, it was quite a surprise to see a midfield pairing of Shelvey and Diarmi, which probably hasn't been seen since 2017-18.
The real lads, isn't it? The real centre mid pairing. You forget how good they were when they were the proper pair together. They were fucking class, and they showed we again the ability that those two have got.
I mean, let's look at Shelvey. He's Hayden was kind of sort of maybe unfairly pushed out to sort of right wing back. It wasn't his natural berth. I imagine obviously Yedlin's gone through a bit of surgery. I suspected Mankiw was crocked before.
For personal reasons, apparently.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, I didn't realise that. Yeah, fair play. Well Hayden filled in there, so which allowed sort of the extra place for Diarmi and Shelvey. And it's fair to say Shelvey had a wonderful old time. And I remember, in fact, the pair of them in that Chelsea game, 3-0 at the end of last season in the final fixture. I remember Shelvey was just, he owned that game, and Diarmi was hunting the ball down when we were out of possession, so much that I could kind of, it was like a bull, I could sort of like hear him like snorting and just chasing down. He was absolutely magnificent. He was brilliant. And again, they both thrived yesterday. And you know, do you think it was just that Shelvey was just too good? Do you think that Fulham gave him too much time and space? Or
Shelvey showed his class yesterday. And I don't think, out of the people on the podcast, I don't think anyone's been more critical than I have this season of Jonjo Shelvey. And he just made us look like an absolute mug yesterday. He was outstanding. And it wasn't, I don't think it was that Fulham gave him too much time and space. He found the time and he found the space for himself. They aren't as bad as we probably have said. You know, they made it difficult for him. He had to make his passes quickly. He had to he had to use his head to get the space and dominate the possession, and he did it so well. It was just an absolute joy to watch, and you could see. I mean, I didn't even realise that this had happened at the time because I was going so mental, but you could see, if you look at his celebration running all the way to the away fans and how buzzing he was, but then Adam's brilliant video that he managed to get of it.
Yeah.
It shows you like the passion and the desire is there in him to perform, and he did it magnificently yesterday.
Talk us through his goal, because like it's definitely in the sort of like, what is it, in the top three goals we've scored this season, or do you think top five maybe?
If you discount Shaw, it's goal of the season for me, and it was. I love seeing out like that. I love seeing it when someone pings a corner at the edge of the box and you volley it straight. And I always remember the one Skull scored against Aston Villa, which was a belter. But this is even better than that. So the ball's pinged from Richie to Shelby on the edge of the box, who bizarrely has way too much time. I mean, Fulham should have been out closing him down much quicker than they were. And then he takes a touch. You know, he says himself in his interview that he didn't think his touch was that good, and he kind of wrong-footed himself. It was fucking perfect. It was perfect, John.
Well, it's one of those where sometimes, you know, if you hit a shot too well, then it won't go in. And sometimes if you put a bit of slice on, it will. And it was kind of one of those. And he did sort of like cut across it a bit, but the way it just arrowed into that top corner.
He's fucking raked it into the top back.
But as you mentioned, the passion and that meant so much to him, because and Rafa's even said it, he's been very candid. It's been a tough year for John Joe, and you know he's been waiting patiently for his opportunity. And I honestly believe he did himself an absolute credit yesterday. It was like Shelby of old, and I think a lot of people it's almost difficult to argue with the sort of form of Hayden, for example, which is keeping one of those people out of the starting lineup. You look at Longstaff, sort of 6 or 7 weeks that he had, which was absolutely very unexpected but magnificent, and he was undroppable, absolutely undroppable. And you'd think he'd still be in the side if he hadn't.
Oh, he would for sure, yeah, he would.
But then you look at sort of like Key, who's come in and done like really good work as well, and Diarmi, who's, you know, Diarmi hasn't been as impressive this campaign, it probably is fair to say, but it's still really effective when he's in there. And again, just put himself about yesterday, but it's like he waited for his opportunity, and you know the fact that he's raced 90 yards at full pace in after like 10 minutes to come and celebrate with the way, and he that meant so much to him, and I'm absolutely delighted for him. I mean, his future is probably still in the balance at the minute. I personally don't think he'd leave, because I think there's probably too many other centre midfielders that are probably going to be out the door for various reasons anyway. But
it depends on whether there's a big offer comes in from, doesn't it? So I think I hope it's not his final game for Newcastle. Now, I haven't said that previously, and I feel a bit harsh about it, but I hope it wasn't his last game for Newcastle. If it was, what a fucking way to go out with that performance, and it probably adds another couple of million quid onto his price tag as well, which might actually work out quite well for us. He'll stay.
Absolutely, I mean, you know, in terms of like, you know, the second goal, nice bit of wing play from some Richie and Atsu, some interplay there, and I mean, I feel like Sergio Rico was quite poor with that Atsu shot, and shouldn't have spilled it. But you know, full credit to Yossi Perez, who's kind of. In terms of his anticipation, it's like this is what one of Dwight Gayle's sort of biggest strengths I felt like last year, that his confidence wasn't necessarily there, Gayle, and he was very easily pushed off the ball. But one thing that Gayle is and still is very good at is his anticipation and his positioning, and just reading where the ball might drop. And Perez seems to have almost picked up that mantle, and the way he was just in like a flash. And that was like two goals in sort of 3 minutes.
Yeah, 121 seconds apparently between the goals.
Absolutely ridiculous. So, I mean, in terms of like our performance, I mean, do you think we just played very well, or do you think that their game plan was sort of thrown right off because we sort of scored two very, very early goals? And they had to, they almost didn't know how to react to that. Do you think sort of heads went down, or did you not expect them to fight too much anyway, given that we're already down? How did you?
No, I don't think that at all. And Scott Parker's transformed them really in recent weeks, and he's turned them into a much more solid defensive unit. So I think you're exactly right. I think that's proper throwing them to concede twice in the first 10 minutes at home, and they've all, you know, they've attempted to build on a solid defensive basis. You concede twice in 10 minutes, you're fucked, aren't you? Like, you're absolutely screwed. And we took advantage of that massively and then just controlled the game really from there. There was only ever going to be one winner at that point. Obviously Fulham would never even looked remotely like coming back into it.
Well, I don't think they were. I mean, they certainly weren't scoring three, let alone like two. But like, it's very similar to Burnley away, whereby we got a two goal lead after about like 20 minutes in that game. But actually, Burnley, obviously a different time of the season. They had a better team, a better manager, and they did show fight in that game, and they did sort of come back into it a bit, but. I think Fulham just rolled over at that point.
Yeah, their heads went down. They weren't coming back into it. I don't think any of them really looked like they cared that much as well, which was quite. If you were a Fulham fan, you'd be really fucking disappointed with that. It's a bad way to finish the season. It's a bad first game for Scott Parkhouse as a full time manager. So they'll be disappointed. But Newcastle deserve all the credit here. We played really fucking well. It wasn't that they laid down for us. We controlled that game and intentionally ran it like that to nullify any potential threat.
Absolutely, and you know, you look at the way that we look at how clinical we were, and I think that was the difference. It was how clinical we were when we had chances. Because actually, if you look at the stats, I mean, Fulham had more shots than we did, but we had more on target and we scored more goals. But I mean, the expected goals, I think, they were about 1.78, we were like 1.77. So actually, we've far exceeded how many goals you would expect to score in a game like that. Just because when we had those chances and we shot on target, we had six shots on target, we scored four of them. I mean, Sergio Rico's only made two saves, and one of them he spilled for Jose Perez for the second goal. So he's only made one. He's only made one realistic save, you know. So like, but it was very obvious from Fulham that they were trying to use Christie down the right. Nearly called him Malcolm Christie there, old Derby favourite, and Sessegnon to try and get a supply line to Mitrovic. But I just felt that as a defence, we read that so well. We were compact when we needed to be. And as we've shown countless times this season, we're a very, very difficult defensive unit to break down.
Yeah.
And because we've got sort of... Because you've got like Rondon as someone who can gain territory on the break, you've got Perez who's a little bit quicker. Atsu's got some pace as well. Obviously, if Almiron was playing in that game...
Could have been 10.
he would have had a lovely old time, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
But I just felt that we, as a defensive unit, we nullified that supply line coming from Christie and from Sessegnon. In the centre, Kearney was constantly finding sort of dead ends when he was trying to maybe feed Mitrovic through.
Yeah.
And it seemed quite easy. I mean, Sessegnon was somebody I was really. He was a player who absolutely tore us up. And him and Kearney in the championship game when they beat us at St James's Park, and his crossing seemed very, very poor. Sessegnon, you know, he's been tipped for big things. Man United, Tottenham interest, but I mean, he's sort of gone off the boil a bit. And you know, it's very, very easy to forget that he's still a very, very young player. But maybe he needs another season of the championship to sort of, you know, to sort of prove his quality again. Kearney as well, but I mean, I was just very, very impressed with our defensive display. Fabian Schär just seemed to be in the way of absolutely everything. The interceptions, he was sliding around. I mean, we were throwing bodies in the way. We were 2-0 up and we're throwing bodies in front of shots, and just everyone defended as a team. And you know, that's not a one foot on the beach performance. That's people snarling and fighting and getting dirty for Rafa Benitez. Like, nobody wanted to let him down.
Yeah, it was really apparent that you're absolutely right with all that. And that's what good football teams do. They make it look easy. We made our defensive display yesterday look easy. And that's, you know, credit to Rafa, credit to Fabian Schär, who was fucking brilliant. Again, he was brilliant. He has to get in the team of the season, by the way.
He's absolutely sensational. He's just you know, we talk about how much he costs all the time, but I mean, forget how impressive that. It's not just that he's impressive for his transfer fee. He's just impressive.
Yeah.
And you know, he just, as I said before, he likes to play with this adventure. He sort of, he really reminds me of an Albert or Dabizas, just somebody who can be effective in the final third, as well as, like, he's just so comfortable. He loves receiving the ball. He's so comfortable on it. You know, you look at the difference between, like, a Lascelles on the ball. I think Lascelles, in fairness, has improved a lot, probably because of the people around him, such as, like, Lejeune and Cher himself. But, like, when we first had Lascelles, I mean, him having the ball was as bad as, like, when Mike Williamson used to have the ball, yeah. Just, like, rabbit in the headlights, panicking, got to get rid of it. Cher thrives on having the ball. He wants the ball, and he'll jump around if he knew he could kind of get away with it, not get a rocket off Rafa at half time. But he's so comfortable, and the fact that he can be a threat when he goes forward.
You can tell he loves it as well, can't you? There was one point towards the end of the second half yesterday that he picked the ball up in defence and made a pass out wide, and he was just like, right, I'm fucking having this, and off he went. You could see him just like sprinting straight up the pitch. The ball ended up going out, and Shaw was like off the pitch, the wrong end of the fucking pitch next to their goal. And I was just like, what a lad. He was buzzing as well.
And I just love that he's now got this reputation that every time he passes the halfway mark, everyone shouts shoot. Yeah. But like, you wouldn't bet against him. You Fabian, wouldn't bet against him like hitting the target.
We're going to have to start calling him Fabian Shoot.
Yay. Nice.
That'll do, that's it.
But I just thought, I mean, he particularly impressed me. But I also just want to talk a bit about Matt Ritchie, if you don't mind. I think
I would love to.
How did you see his performance yesterday?
It was the most, the most typical Matt Ritchie performance we could ever see. So he was an angry little shite, like kicking people, booting off.
Sometimes his own teammates.
Yeah, I've watched it like 100 times today. The footage of him just smacking Cher after his goal. It's too much. And I imagine if you had to kind of work with someone like that. Like, in our jobs, if someone was just like, get in, Mickey, bang, 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 bang in the head.
You just imagine this morning, Cher's just like knocking on the door of HR.
And
the club's just like, yeah.
Submitting an incident report. But that kind of sums him up, doesn't it? As ridiculous as that is, the fact that he gets so buzzing about stuff and he just has to get all this like aggression. He's so penned up with aggression that he has to get it out in any way he can. He's just like, fucking get in, Newcastle have scored. Smacking the teammates on the head. If you look closer, his right hand, he's doing the same thing to Lascelles.
Yeah, bit of misdirection, sleight of hand there. Yeah. Sort of. Lascelles thinks he's safe, but no, it's coming. Smack.
He'll get you any way he can. Like,
I also got footage of after the Rondon goal. So Kennedy's jumped up on a pile, so they're all like hugging. Kennedy's jumped up going, way, and Richie just comes on the right hand side, sees Rondon's arse, smack, honestly, and then Rondon like turns around and smiles, like it's so he even got one in on Rondon, yeah. As well, which is a little bonus that I found on my photos earlier in the day.
That's tremendous. To look at his actual performance, so footballing wise, I thought he was very, very good. So defensively he was excellent. Now got past him, as you said, the Fulham tried to target the wings as their way of exploiting us, and they just couldn't do it. And it was the same on the right hand side, but Richie didn't put a foot wrong defensively. Going forward, I thought he had one of his most effective games for a while. So he hung on the ball very well. He was constantly offering a threat. He constantly looked dangerous. His deliveries were excellent. You know, he's picked out Shelby for the first goal, which I just can't give him enough credit for, because I mean that's a 60-yard pass that's gone to his feet. He's found Cher, although Cher was totally unmarked, like, but he found Cher's head for the third.
Like you say, that's that quality of delivery.
Yeah, it was. I thought he was brilliant yesterday, and I'm buzzing for him because he doesn't get the credit he deserves, Richie, and people focus too much on the ridiculous stuff, as we've just done there, about how nuts he is. But actually, in there, he's a really good footballer, and people forget as well. He's a fucking right winger. He's a right winger, and he's playing left back, like the opposite position of what he wants to be playing. He wants to be playing against a left back.
Absolutely. I mean, I was just going to mention, so we did a pod for exclusively for patrons a couple of months ago, where there was a few of us got together, and it was like, name your if you were the manager, what's your preferred formation and starting lineup? And I refused to put Richie left back because I ended up putting Dummett as a left wing back. is the best option, simply because, and I know it's not Dummett's, it's not Dummett's natural position, but I was kind of just against the idea of, where Newcastle United, like, why are we putting a square peg in a round hole, a right winger at left wing back? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to accept that. But actually, my opinion of him has changed. I was more than happy to have seen him, if in the mooted deal of like him going to Stoke or wherever it was going to be, and maybe Townsend coming in for him, I would have been absolutely for that change, simply because I never felt that Richie was sort of penetrative enough in that final third. But actually, he seems to have found just a whole new, like a new home in that left wing back. He's made it his own. Even, you know, we bought a left wing back. We've got in Bereke on loan, who yeah. hasn't had a look in. We've got Kennedy, who hasn't had a look in. Richie is a right winger, and he's absolutely thrived in that left wing back position. And yesterday, even, you know, there was a couple of crosses that Sessegnon did get into the box, but there's Matt Richie, one of the smallest players on the pitch, doing back headers yeah. away, and he did that a couple of times, like really, really important. And the way he marshalled Christie as well, I was just really, really impressed with. And like you say, he shows all that fight. He just embodies the team spirit. And it's like, what I really love about this team, Mickey, is the fact that, you know, people, it's just a good, really likable set of people, and there's no dicks, there's no like little shits. And in a way, yes, he is the little shit, but it's the best kind of yeah. in the best possible way. It's a compliment, Matt, if you're listening. but like just fantastic. And he's finished the season with 8 assists, which has been the most most any player that has managed for a good few seasons, I believe. And like,
I really hope that this isn't the end for Matt Ritchie, actually. And you know, we've kicked off for years on the podcast about not having a proper left back and not signing a left back, and after Pardew had like a plethora of left backs, we basically haven't signed anyone since. We have now Bereke, but he can't get in past Matt Ritchie, because Matt Ritchie now, if you're going to say what position Matt Ritchie is now, you'd have to say
he's left
right wing forward slash left wing back. You have to. Yeah. That's what he is.
Well, I honestly think he's a lot more natural in there, because I think because he's coming from deeper, it's almost like he doesn't have to beat. Yeah. He doesn't have to get to the byline anymore. He's probably discouraged from doing that, probably, because he's got Almiron or Atsu ahead of him anyway, who can take that last leg, if you will.
Yeah.
But you know, he gets more crosses in from deep. You saw that his support play for that Perez goal at Leicester, you know, how important that was. You know, Almiron had a go driving at the defence. It came back to him. He was sitting a little bit deeper, and then he was able to get across in. And it works for him that he has just that bit more time.
Yeah,
and he has that space in front of him. But just really, really impressed. You talk about Cher before, and the way, like, you know, he just sort of like, he just loves it, plays with a smile on his face. But I mean, there was one man who was, even though he was frustrated for most of the game, that was put right towards the end, was Salomon Rondon, and that just beautiful grin that he's got on his face, and the adulation that he was getting from the away end. What really struck me, Mickey, was the fact that it looked like the entire team was just willing him to score.
Yeah.
So I remember a particular time, you know, there was a pullback, and he had a shot that was blocked really, really well, by the way. I mean, I don't think Rigo would have, he hit it, the contact was so sweet, and it was a really, really good block. And there was a couple of one-on-ones where Callum Chambers covered, and Mawson was around and marshalling him, but you could just tell it was like, he was so desperate to score, and his teammates were so desperate to set him up. There was a bit in the second half where Shelvey was progressing with the ball, and Mudo, who'd come on as a sub, was in acres of space on the right hand side, but instead Shelvey went for a keyhole pass through the middle. It found Rondon, tried to take around the keeper, hit the side net, but you could just tell how much it really epitomised how much he is loved. You know, obviously the fan base loves him. I think that's 11 goals, 7 assists for the season, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Obviously, the manager really appreciates what he does, but the fact that he's appreciated as much by his own teammates as well, he's so important to the way we play.
He's absolutely key to the style of play that Rafa Benitez has got this team playing now, and I think the rest of the lads know that, they can see it. So when you've got someone as a centre forward that's willing to put in the amount of effort that he is defensively, it's just fucking brilliant. And it starts, when you start defending like that from the front, it makes everyone's jobs behind much easier, and it buys people time to have a rest, it buys people time to get back in position and get set properly. And it's, you know, it's, you can't put a price on that. That's the sign of a very, very good footballer that's doing exactly what the manager needs him to do. That's why the lads love him, because he's fucking great at his job. And I don't think there's anyone else in the Premier League that does that could do that role as well as Salman Rondon. Genuinely, I think he's the perfect striker for Newcastle. Obviously, we'd like him to score more, but if we're being realistic about our possibilities going forward, Rondon is the fucking man. He's the absolute man, and I was delighted for him yesterday.
Well, I know, because he'd had so many sort of bites of the cherry, and even like for the goal, in fact, yeah. that was the other shot on target.
Yeah, it
was. I've just thought, yeah. So Rico literally did not make a save yesterday that didn't lead to a goal. So Rondon threw on goal again. He's just like, right, this is it, come on. Like, it's the 89th minute, he's had a shot, Rico parries it, but he's so eager and determined to put the ball in that net. And when I was kind of blocked a bit from Rondon because the keeper was in the way from where I was sitting, and then I just saw the ball emerge and then just roll across the line into the side net, and I'm just like, come on. And and you could just see the relief on his face as well, like he really, really wanted that. But I remember, like, in the second half, just around some of the corners that we had, and we were all singing Salman Rondon, we want you to stay, and he, you know, he turned with a huge grin on his face. You could tell how much, that meant to him to be wanted and to feel wanted, and particularly for a loan signing. Can you recall a loan player being more fondly thought of in recent memory than Salman Rondon?
Definitely not. Everyone loves him. He's such an easy guy to like, and for all the reasons we said before. You know, he works hard, he's very effective, he does all the defensive stuff that he needs to do, but he just looks like such a nice bloke. Like, I'd like to be mates with him. I'd really like to be pals with him and see what he's like, what his crack is at the weekend, like at the beach, going for a walk and stuff. I think it would be fucking great. I can't think of anyone that's taken to the city and the city's taken to in such a way that's been a loan signing ever.
Because I mean, we were kind of buzzing with Kennedy at the back end of last season, and like, you know, I think he's got a couple of goals, got a couple of assists. I mean, that was great. That was canny. But, like, we were buzzing over that. But then we've suddenly got another loan signing, which we almost didn't sign, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at as people have done sort of, like, league tables since sort of Rondon's first start. And I think if you took the season from the point that he starts, we'd be finishing in like sort of eight. That's our form since he started his first game has been about eighth in the table. And you just think that's a true reflection of like what this team is about and what it's capable of. And he's such an important spearhead, but he's so important because we just don't have anybody else who can do what he does. And the system falls apart when he's not there.
Yeah, it really does. He's the most important player in that system. It's critical to have a striker that's big, can hold the ball up and bring the other players into play, and he does it so perfectly. Rafa must love him. He must love him. And I imagine that the Rondon deal is one of the probably many sticklers in the contract negotiations at the moment, because Rafa will be saying, "Oh yeah, man, lads, like look at what he's done this season."
I mean, sort of annoyed that I haven't worked this out before coming on the pod, but it would be really interesting. I'm sure everyone will tell us anyway, in terms of how many points he's gained us with his goals. You know, you look at the two he got against Bournemouth, for example. I think it was that 2-1 in the end. That would have been a defeat. Mm-hmm. You look at the Huddersfield win. That was a Salman Rondon single effort. There was another one away from home. He got a header in. He got a point away at Everton. There are so many. I think it was at Watford, possibly, he got a header in. Mm-hmm. So there are so many points that he's amassed by himself, and you almost have to say, well, without Rondon, we're down here in the league, we're further down, and how much, you know, if we forget the football, you've got to speak to Ashley in terms of, like, business. Money. Like, how much money has he actually gained us back just from how important those goals have been. It's absolutely priceless. We'd probably be close to relegation.
We would make no mistake. We would have been relegated without Salomon Rondon this year. With Hosselu up front, as much as I like Hosselu, you know, he's shite. If we hadn't had Rondon this season, we would be getting relegated, and it would be costing Ashley £100 million. That's what Salomon Rondon's worth to Mike Ashley, but he still won't fucking sanction the transfer, will he? It's almost like self harm. It's
lunacy, mate. It's absolutely lunacy. Yeah. It's illogical, and you know, even when Rondon was starting his first few games for Newcastle, he wasn't match fit.
Yeah,
and no. He wasn't match fit because he hadn't had a proper pre-season because of this transfer saga dragging on. This is why Rafa Benitez wanted players in before the World Cup, so you could work with them and have them fit, ready for the season. You know, classic conditioning. And instead, Rondon had his pre-season after the season had started, which meant that we were 10 games behind everybody else in terms of like that fitness and the impact that he's had. I mean, remember those first few games that he started? He couldn't make it past an hour, and you're thinking, Christ, there's no way he's going to last the whole season, but he has.
And he's flourished.
And fair play to the fitness coaches and Rafa Benitez and Rondon himself because of how crucial his contribution is and his role is to the team. You say you remove that, we can't play like we play. We can't play in the way that wins us games. Absolutely crucial. So if you're not going to buy Rondon, and we've said this before, if you're not going to buy Rondon, you need to buy somebody as good as him, which you will not get for the price that we're being touted for.
Not even double that amount of money wouldn't get with someone as good.
And you need somebody else as well. You need a younger backup who's going to be able to relieve the pressure just in case Rondon gets injured, so that Rondon can have a rest and so we can, you know, use and utilise squad rotation. But the reason we don't really do that is because we don't really have the players to fit into that system. Yeah.
I love him. I'd be very surprised if he ever was to listen to anything that we do. But if you do, Salomon, I fucking love you, mate.
Your classmate, the Venezuelan warrior, as I've called you all season, and he's just class. He's the smiling assassin.
Yeah.
Love him. I just want a big hug off him. He's mint.
You know, his celebration yesterday after he scored reminded me of Shearer, because like everyone celebrated together, everyone's going mental. And then everyone kind of walks away, and Rondon starts to walk away, and he's like, nah, I'm going back, and he turns back around.
And there's a last, absolutely.
I was
great
so
call.
Buzzing with that.
Great call.
I'm sure the one I'm thinking of was Shearer was against Sunderland. I can't remember the game, but that really reminded me of Shearer there from Rondon, and I was just so, like, I was so pleased. You could see just how buzzing he was.
Shearer did it, I think, also at the game at Highbury, where we won 3-1 and went top of the league. Under Bobby Robson, it was where Robert scored. So he just netted a penalty. I don't think he'd ever scored at Highbury at the time. He netted a penalty to make it 2-1. After Sol Campbell had sort of like taken down Robert, and that was one where everyone piled on and stuff like that. And then he just lingered, didn't he, in front of the stand and just did another like on his own. And yeah, really good shout there.
I'm pleased. I remember that.
Just a quick word on Fulham. You know, who, if anyone, impressed you yesterday from Fulham?
Anybody? No, nobody really. They have got some good players in there. So I think Kearney's a decent footballer, but he couldn't get near it yesterday. Our centre midfield was so dominant, and defensively we were so sound that he just couldn't get a sniff. And I think in a better footballing team, he will be a good player, and he'll probably move on. You would think move on this summer, although he has to sign a new 4-year contract.
I mean, it wasn't so long ago that he's been touted £25 million to last season to sort of join us potentially. I mean, that seems pretty ludicrous now, even in today's sort of market.
I'd be very surprised if they got that much from him, but I do think he's a good player, and I think we'll see him sign for a bottom half Premier League club next year. Potentially us, you never know. But other than him, you know, there's definitely potential in Sessegnon as well. But he was quiet yesterday. He's only 17 though. So.
He's got a sats later on. So he's like his mind's been other places. Word on Harvey Elliott, the young 16-year-old who's I believe is the Premier League's officially youngest player ever. I think he came on in a game a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
He is Premier League's youngest player, but he also has the Premier League's daftest haircut.
He does have a stinking haircut, yeah.
It's just like a top knot of just like rank proportions, isn't it, really? But I mean, he showed some real maturity and composure. I mean, I remember he sort of like, we were defending a corner, and it's sort of like, he was sort of on the halfway, around the halfway line, and Rondon was kind of chasing after him, and he just, Elliot sort of did like a drop of the shoulder and just moved his body and just found the space and then got away from Rondon quite easy. I mean, Rondon's not a defender, but it was just, you know, a 16-year-old lad getting chased by Salomon Rondon, one of the...
Nine foot tall Rondon,
one of the most famous people in his country, and just sort of just shrugging him off. And he had a very good opportunity to score as well, which Dubravka was equal to. He sort of did everything right. He jinked in, and you can see the whole crowd behind that goal just like stood up and took an inhaling breath. And he sort of did the right thing, Harvey Elliott, instead of like, he sort of like tried to catch Dubravka off and it was near post, but Dubravka was equal to it. The shot wasn't quite in the corner. But he seems to be quite a young talent, and I was, in the short burst that we saw, I was relatively impressed with him. And I think if he gets I would like to think he would sort of start games in the championship, because I think they'll hemorrhage some players. And if there could be a real talent there. He could be better than Sessegnon in terms of like his potential or whatever. But I was just particularly impressed by him.
Yeah.
How do you think they'll fare next year under Scott Parker? Do you think they'll do all right?
I think Fulham will have a good chance of being one of the better sides in the league, but you can never tell, can you? It depends who stays. It depends on how much money they've got available for transfers. So I don't know. You would think that there'll be playoffs or better, because Parker's turned them around. He's got them playing decent football and defensively sound. So I think they'll have a good chance to come back up. You're right to bring up that young lad, by the way, and it's credit to Fulham, because this isn't the first time that they've been not afraid to start someone that's ridiculously young. Mike Ashley would love stuff like that to happen at Newcastle. So it was nice to see, and it's always good to see a young player getting the breakthrough. But I hope they treat his development properly, and he doesn't just fucking sign for Chelsea or something and then end up sitting in the reserves.
Just go the way of the Rodwell. I mean, the thing is, Scott Parker was always kind of a model professional throughout his playing career, and he seems to be someone who you would respect in a dressing room, but he seems just quite a reasonable character. I don't really know what I'm basing that on, but he just seems to be quite a reasonable player. And the fact that he got back-to-back clean sheets out of them says that he maybe has some talent as a young English manager, which is quite exciting as well for the game.
Definitely, it's good to see. I wish him all the best. He was a likeable guy. I didn't think he was particularly the centre midfielder we needed when he played for Newcastle, but he was a good footballer and he seems like a nice bloke, so I hope he does all right next year. I want to be able to go back to Craven Cottage as well, because it's a great place to watch football.
It certainly is when you're winning 4-0. I'm just really glad Lewis Bormorty wasn't playing yesterday, because we definitely would have conceded. There was a sort of final note. There was possible goodbyes for sort of a few people in Newcastle. I'm just going to sort of reel off a list, Mickey, and I want you to say if it is goodbye, yes or no. Okay.
Well, I'm going to be dead positive here, because.
Okay. Is it goodbye for Rafa?
Yes.
Oh.
This isn't going to be positive. Sorry.
Is it goodbye from Diomi?
Yes.
Is it goodbye from Shelby?
No.
Goodbye from Rondon?
Yes.
Goodbye from Perez?
Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You think he'll go?
Yeah.
That's massive. That. Goodbye from Kennedy?
Oh yeah, good fucking riddance.
Thought so. And just a word on. Just a word on Isaac Hayden, actually, which was he was playing out of position yesterday. He's not really his most memorable game of the season, but he was asked to do a job and he did it. But Isaac Hayden got taken off, and it almost certainly seems to be like a genuine goodbye from Isaac Hayden. Obviously, we were very, very aware of those reasons, and he got a really nice send off, I thought, and something that he'll hopefully sort of take on and remember. And what are your sort of like final thoughts on Isaac Hayden, who got a nice little chant at the end when he went off?
He did. It's a shame what's happening. I feel for him. It's a shame that it's not going to work out playing for Newcastle, because he's become such an important player for us, and he's good. Now if Newcastle were a properly run real football club, we would be looking to replace.
Good one, Mickey. Good one.
We'd be looking to replace Isaac Hayden with someone better. Now that we don't operate like that, and we probably should have done that anyway, regardless of whether he was leaving or not. But it's just a shame that he's come into such good form right at the end. So
It is, but ultimately, Rafa Benitez has turned a £2.5 million player into a £20 million player. He is a competent, very, very good, high energy, tactically disciplined Premier League midfielder, and you probably couldn't have said that. And Isaac Hayden is probably the first to admit this. You probably couldn't have said that at the start of the season.
No, definitely not.
We all know his kind of where his mentality was, and he's, you know, it shows the character of the guy that, you know, he came out and he did that interview, and he was so candid and just honest and sort of bearing his life and his soul, and you could tell how much he cares.
Yeah.
He said it was almost like the most gutting thing that he thought that people didn't think that he gave a shit, when he absolutely did. He just gave a shit about his family more, and fucking rightly so. That comes first, and good luck to him. And you know, wherever he goes, he's gonna get. And you know, he was linked to Brighton, wasn't he? He's better than Brighton.
Yeah, he's better than Brighton now. Yeah.
He's better than Brighton.
He should have. He'll have far more options now than he would have if he'd left at this point last year or even in January. So
he's a kind of player that, like, if West Ham didn't have Declan Rice, he'd do a job there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, credit to Rafa and credit for the application that Isaac Hayden's shown in the face of adversity to turn around and become one of the most important players of our squad this season, which most you would never have called.
Yeah, if you'd said that to me at the start of the season, I would have laughed at you.
Yeah, you often do laugh at me, Mickey, but it's often justified. Anyway, I think we'll round it up unless you've got anything else to say, Mickey.
Just a final reminder that Newcastle United scored 4 goals away from home yesterday, and what a pleasure and a privilege it is to follow this football club, and everyone just keep your fucking fingers crossed that the right thing happens this summer. So you know your list of people that were goodbye. They're all linked to Rafa. So if Rafa stays, you would like to think that Rondon would probably stay, because he'll be pushing pretty hard to keep Rondon. You'd think Perez will probably stay. Shelby would want to stay and work under Rafa. You know, possibly. So they're all linked to Rafa. We just need that one thing to happen right.
And it's almost like a domino effect, but in a very good way.
In a good way, yeah. Like if you filmed dominoes getting knocked down and then played it in reverse.
Oh, I like it. That's quite a good visual analogy there. Yeah. Be proud of it, maybe.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. Thanks again, as ever, to our patrons who allow us to do this, allow us to go to cover every single Premier League game in person, which, you know, no other independent fan group is able to do in terms of sort of podcast output. And please check out our YouTube videos. We've got the match day video as well. We've got loads and loads planned for the summer. We've got game shows. We've got some sort of specialist pods as well. We're going to be having a look at, you know, doing some stuff with the foundation. We've got some really, really exciting plans as well from pre-season as well, and we'll be jet setting around the world as well, so watch out for news about that. If you're interested in betting, if you already do have a little bit of a flutter, check out @fansbet and see what they can do for you. But please don't start gambling on our behalf if you don't already do so. That's
should quickly mention as well. We hosted a talking show in London at the weekend, the night before the film game, which was a roaring success. I really enjoyed myself, and everyone seemed to have a good night. So thanks to anyone that came down. Thanks for coming. It was fucking great of you to come and support what we're doing.
And it's really good to actually, you know, meet you listeners face to face, and just sort of, you know, it's really nice to hear feedback, and because we put out all this content, and you know, we sort of put it out there, and yeah, we get the odd, you know, get some comments on social media, but you know, to actually sort of meet the people who we kind of do this for, it's like you're the reason that we do this, and yeah, you're the reason that we're even able to do this, and obviously a big thank you to George Colton of the Times and Luke Edwards of the Telegraph who gave up their time to be at the event, who they were a hilarious double act of Bert and Ernie proportion. So thanks, gents, if you're listening. Cheers. So this is Adam Widgerton signing off as host. Last home game of the season, 4-0 belter. Mickey?
4-0 Mags, what a belter.
What a belter. Take it easy. Cheers.